Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, April 25th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about Gareth Evans' long-awaited action movie, Havoc, and we'll present an interview with writer-director Gareth Evans. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
All right, Chris, let's just get right into it. Spoiler-free reaction. What do you think about Havoc?
I was not really a big fan. I really wanted to like this. I like action movies. I like violent action movies. But there was something so like cold and detached about this that I just kind of couldn't really gel with it. It's not a boring movie by any means. But it's pretty much just nonstop set pieces where characters shoot guns constantly, and like constantly, like no one like fires like one shot in this movie. They like pull the trigger a million times, and like the bullets are just like constantly flying, to the point where like there'll be scenes where characters just like shoot their guns forever, and then when they stop shooting, your ears are like ringing. It's like, oh my god, like there's a point where like I just started to be like, all right, let's dial it down a notch. And also, like, I'm not saying like every action movie has to be like a comedy or something, but like, shouldn't action movies be fun? Like, this is so like dour and unpleasant that by the time it ended, I was just like, man, I did not enjoy watching this. Like, you know, Gareth Evans directed the Raid movies, and those movies are brutal, and those movies are violent, but there's a certain amount of, like, fun to be had in those movies, and there's, like, no fun here. Like, I do think a point of part of it is because it's a different type of action. Like, the Raid movies, while there is, like, gunfire in those movies, a lot of the action in the movie is driven by, like, hand-to-hand combat, and that's exciting, and in this movie, the action is very gun-centric, and that can only get you so far. Like, you can make gun violence exciting. Like, you know, Heat is a great example of that. There's a great big shootout sequence in Heat during a bank robbery that's very thrilling, but that's because it's, like, one big shootout nestled in a movie that isn't filled with shootouts. When you have a movie that's literally, like, wall-to-wall shootouts, it starts to get kind of, like, tiresome, where it's just like, oh man, they're just sort of like repeating themselves here. So I did not love this as much as I wanted to.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there with you. I felt the same way about some of the shootout stuff, and I actually asked Gareth Evans about that, and he said it was like an homage to John Woo and Johnny To and these kind of like Hong Kong cinema action filmmakers who really kind of brought that over the top style to the forefront. And so I understand it on that level, but it doesn't necessarily make this movie that much fun to watch, like you said. And I was thinking about what you said about the Raid movies being fun, and I think it's been a while since I've revisited those. But looking back on them, I wonder if the fun that I had watching the Raid was being introduced to this style of intense action filmmaking that Gareth Evans has kind of cornered the market on. And if, like, the fun that I had was just being blown away by the novelty of it at the time. And, like, because, I don't know, I'm thinking back to the Raid films, and, like, there aren't a lot of jokes in those movies. There's not a lot of levity. It is, like, characters in extremely high-pressure situations going through and just wrecking dudes for, you know, an hour and a half or whatever it is. And, like, there's an inventiveness in those movies that, like, maybe that's where the fun comes from, I guess.
Yeah.
But there's also some inventive stuff in this movie too. And Havoc kind of like got me spinning out, man. Like it kind of put me in this existential thing of like, what do we really want from action movies? Because as a, like, holistically, I think Havoc doesn't really work very well. I think it's my least favorite Gareth Evans movie by a mile. And I just was not particularly impressed by the character work or the plotting or really the movie as you would judge it up against any other type of dramatic storytelling. But the action in this film is incredible. There's like some jaw-dropping stuff here, and the creativity and the choreography and like the controlled chaos that's on display is kind of like what I want as an action movie lover. So what does that mean when I get what I want, but it's in a housing that I don't particularly care for? You know what I mean? Like, so how do you think about that?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And like, going back to like what you said, where Gareth Evans was telling you, like, this is like an homage to like John Woo and those Hong Kong movies. Those movies, while they are, they have a lot of gunplay. The gunplay is so like operatic and stylized, and I don't think Havoc does that. Like, Havoc literally just has people shooting guns. And like, yes, there is impressive like camera work where the camera like slams around with people and stuff like that, but like, for the most part, this is literally just people pointing guns and firing them excessively while shouting. And it's really like ugly and unpleasant. And I'm not saying like, I feel like that's like a stupid thing to say, like, of course gunplay is unpleasant, but I don't know, man. This movie is so like unapologetically nasty. Like, I don't want to give away spoilers because you said not to give away spoilers, but like, there's two specific scenes, without giving away what happens, that like, where just like straight up innocent people are like brutally gunned down. And I'm like, I don't really think the movie needed this. Like, it's one thing to have like criminals and cops being shot in your movie, because like, there's a sort of like, all right, these people signed up for this. Like, they're our main characters. They're our action stars. It makes sense that they're getting shot. But like, if you're going to have a scene where two innocent people are like gunned down, they're both killed in the same way. They're both shot in the back. And it's like, why is this in the movie? Like, it just left a really shitty taste in my mouth, where I was just like, I don't think you needed this to be in the movie. Like, are you trying to make, like, I don't think the movie understands what it wants to be. Like, are you trying to make like a nasty thriller, like Abel Ferreira's Bad Lieutenant, where it's like the dark and grittiness of being a cop in the city? Or are you trying to make like a heightened, over the top action movie, like, you know, John Woo's The Killer? Like, those are very different types of movies. Like, and I don't think this movie really knows what it wants to be. Like, there's a certain like unreality here, where like almost every shot of the city where the movie is, like, they never say where it's taking place. Like, it looks digital and fake. Like, it looks like they're in Robert Rodriguez's Sin City. Like, it's like, yes, this does not look like a real place. So it's like, are you trying to make a real gritty movie, or are you trying to make like Batman with guns? Like, I think the movie doesn't really have a grasp on what it wants to be. And I think that's really my biggest problem here, is like, it's a question of like tone. It's a question of what, of style. Like, I'm all for stylish movies. I'm all for over the top action movies, but there's gotta be some sort of like give or take here. And I don't think the movie really knows what it's doing. It's just like a nasty, ugly movie. There's no one, the characters are so paper thin. Like, there's nothing to any of these characters. Like, Tom Hardy's character is like a dirty cop who sort of regrets being a dirty cop. But like, we've seen that in a million different movies. Like, there's really not much to that character. And, I like Tom Hardy. He does the best he can with this material. He certainly handles himself well in the action scenes, but I don't know, man, it just, there needs to be more. Like, it's one thing if you're going to have like all these cool action scenes, but like, they need to like, amount to something, I guess. I don't know. Like, I'm not saying like this needed to be like an intellectual exercise or something like that. Like, I can get down with a mindless action movie, but I don't know. Just something about this does not work for me.
Yeah, it's like I'm so torn because I think part of me is wondering if I'm holding this to too high of a standard, and then another part of me is like, no, damn it, we should have standards. You know, like there's a like my friends and I, when we were in high school, we would just rent whatever kind of crazy martial arts movie that was out at the time from Blockbuster. And we didn't care about the plot. We only cared about the action scenes, and we would lose our minds when these wild action scenes would come up. And I imagine, you know, the high schoolers of today, who the budding action cinephiles of today, doing the same thing watching this movie. And so it's like a success on that level. But I think I just in terms of standards, like I would love it if this movie had that and it also had characters that I cared about and it also had a terrific story and all of this. And like, I don't know, it's just kind of like I said, I'm split between like appreciating what the movie did give me and then also wanting a lot more from it. So I don't know where that really leaves me in terms of like whether or not I think this movie is successful at what it sets out to do. So it's just kind of a weird thing.
Yeah, I just don't think it really does what it wants to do. Like, I honestly don't think the action is that impressive, especially when you hold it up to some Gareth Evans other movie. And even if you hold it up to some other Netflix action movies, like The Night Comes for Us is always like my gold standard for Netflix action movies. Like, that movie is insane. That movie is incredibly violent, but it's so inventive and over the top and unique that I can completely get down with what that movie is doing. Whereas this movie is just like, it's the characters move from one ugly location to the next. They shoot guns and then it ends. And I'm just sort of like, I need a little bit more, man. I need this to, you know, I don't need it to like reinvent the wheel, but you got to give me something more.
Yeah. And like, you have Timothy Oliphant and Forrest Whitaker and like these big heavy hitters in supporting roles. And there's just kind of nothing there. And like, maybe it is just Gareth Evans like playing with archetypes and not really being interested in fleshing out these characters in an interesting way because he just wants to make his version of a cop in the city, you know, corrupt underworld kind of movie. But, you know, when you have something like Apostle, the Netflix movie that he made back in, I think that was 2018, I caught up with that for the first time before watching Havoc because I wanted to see all of his movies and just kind of have that stuff in my head. And Apostle was like this folk horror movie that also has some gnarly action moments in it, but that one feels so much more tonally controlled. And like, it feels like he knew a lot more of what kind of movie that he wanted to make with that one. And this one, it just, yeah, it kind of feels like a collection of tropes, and there's just not much to it. It's hard to invest when the characters are this paper thin. And I will say, like, on my first viewing of the whole movie, I was a little underwhelmed by the action. And then when I went back to rewatch some of the set pieces my second time watching them, I was like, oh my god, this is like way more impressive than I thought the first time. I think because I was just kind of bummed out watching the movie the first time through because I wasn't really connecting with it emotionally, but just watching it almost as like you're watching just the fight scenes on YouTube or something. You know, you don't have to go to YouTube because this is a Netflix movie. You can just fire it up on Netflix. But just watching the action set pieces in that context, I was much more impressed with them watching them in isolation than I was in context. So again, I don't really know what that means in terms of like whether or not this is a successful movie, but I thought that was worth noting because I was pretty underwhelmed the first time around. The one exception to that that I was not really impressed by the second time is the opening car chase, which you mentioned the whole city looking digital, and that car chase, man, that was just really rough. It's like all the effects, and he shot the movie in Wales, and there's not really a ton of infrastructure for a big action movie like this there. So I think a lot of it was digital. And what did you think about that opening car chase?
Yeah, again, like on paper, I should be loving, like, there's literally a moment where like these guys are in a truck and they throw a washing machine at a cop car. And like, saying that, it's like, oh, that sounds cool, but there's no like weight to it. It's just like, it just does not look real. Like the idea of throwing a washing machine at a car, and I was like, that's cool in theory, but this just does not look great. And I don't know. Yeah. I'm bummed out, man, because I was looking forward to this. I like action movies. I like Gareth Evans. I like Tom Hardy. I was hoping for a fun, violent action movie, and what I just got was a not fun, violent action movie. And there are some moments, like, I don't want to say that's like I hated this, like, but like, I don't know, like there are points where it just gets so ridiculous that I just started, like, there's a part. This is kind of a spoiler, but not really. Like, there's a part where a guy points a gun, like a machine gun, directly up against someone and pulls the trigger, and he's screaming, and like fountains of blood are flying into his face. I just started like cackling because I was just like, this is so like ridiculous. Like, it's just, I don't know. It
almost goes into like MacGruber territory or something, you know, yeah. Where there's like, it almost feels like an SNL sketch where like somebody's getting gunned down and it's slow motion and like their shoulders are like alternating, like flying backwards, like almost as if they're in like a dance or something.
Yeah.
And they're just being gunned down and like blood is spurting everywhere. And I think it is him trying to do this operatic thing, and like maybe those moments are these operatic homages to the Hong Kong action cinema that he loves, but as a whole the movie doesn't really feel that way because it's kind of dragged down by the characters and like the plotting and stuff, you know.
Yeah, it's a slog, man. It really is a slog, which is just a bummer. Like, this should not be as underwhelming as it is. And I really do wonder, like, this has gone through a lot of like behind the scenes issues. Like they wrapped this in like 2021 and they went back and did reshoots and stuff like that. So I really do wonder, like, if something got lost in the shuffle. I don't know. Like, I just don't know, like, what really went on behind the scenes. Like, I just don't know if like he went back to the drawing board or what, but like, yeah, I don't know. I wanted to like this, and I didn't. I wrote the review for slashfilm.com. It should be up by the time this episode airs. So I encourage people to go read my review for more of my thoughts on this. But I'm just a little bummed out. I wanted to like this, and I didn't. My bottom line here is, like, just go watch The Night Comes for Us. Like, that's like, I can never recommend that movie enough. Like, that's just one of my favorite Netflix, or it's one of my favorite action movies of all time. It's just, The Night Comes for Us is just such a killer action movie, and it's kind of like ruined other action movies for me. Like, every time I watch a new action movie and it's not The Night Comes for Us, I'm just like, well, this is no The Night Comes for Us.
Yeah, I mean, I think I enjoyed this movie a little bit more than you did, especially going back and revisiting the action sequences, because man, there's a club scene that takes place near the middle of the movie that is just lights out. There's just incredible design work and the stunt choreography, and like, you've got Tom Hardy and it's pretty clear he's doing a lot of his own stunts in it, and there's this long continuous shot that goes through there that's just very impressive from like a tickling the action junkie part of my brain standpoint, you know. And then there's this big I guess spoilers for the end of the movie, but there's this big shootout in a cabin or like a lake house or whatever it is, like a shack effectively, that is I mean, just cacophonous, but in a way that when you just watch that scene from like an action film lover's perspective, I found it to be really thrilling, and like, I wish the rest of the movie had that same energy. So yeah, a little bit of a mixed review, I guess, for me. But I think action movies will, or action junkies will, find probably a lot to like about this movie. So yeah, even though I wish it definitely had more heart to it and more to it overall. All right, let's take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So, Chris, I just wanted to mention this story because I didn't put this in my written version of this interview, and I don't have anybody else to tell this to. But I was doing this interview with Gareth Evans, which people are about to hear, and an earthquake happened during the middle of the interview, which has never happened to me before. And I was asking him about his relationship to visual effects because, and like how that's changed over his career, because I was hoping to get into some specifics about, you know, why the movie looks the way it does and like why he relied on VFX, especially for that opening car chase, which you and I said we didn't really care for the way that it looks. And I was just kind of like, I wanted to kind of push him on that. And as I asked him that question, he begins answering it, and then an earthquake happens, and I'm like getting alerts on my phone and like I'm on camera with him trying to hold it together and like literally grabbing the side of the table as like my world is shaking around me. And he is like in the UK on his side, so he has no idea what's going on, and I'm trying desperately to like keep this together and like keep, you know, stay professional in this situation. And I like, obviously there's an earthquake happening, so I just basically tuned out every single thing that he was saying about visual effects. Like that whole answer, I just got absolutely nothing because I was worried about my safety and the safety of others in my area. So eventually that sort of settled down. I mean, it was a pretty quick earthquake, but his answer was so long that I had time to like acknowledge that, freak out, you know, calm down again. And then by the time he answered the question, I was just kind of like, well, I didn't hear a single word of that in my mind. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess I better just move on to the next thing. So I'm bummed that that happened because I really wanted to kind of push him a little bit on the VFX question. But I listened back to it and he gave a good answer. So people are about to hear that right now. But has that ever happened to you? Like an earthquake in like a work setting or any sort of like weather event that was unexpected?
No, you know, I live in New Jersey. We have had one or two earthquakes, believe it or not, which is kind of weird, but they've never like really gotten in the way of work. It's just sort of like, is that an earthquake? I also live like, I have train tracks in the back of my yard, so it's always like, is that an earthquake or the train going by? So I've never had like anything like outrageous or anything like that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, thanks for indulging me. I just had to tell somebody about that. It was just a weird thing that happened. Okay. Here is my interview with Gareth Evans.
Hey, Gareth, how are you?
How are you doing, man?
I am excellent. Thank you so much for speaking with me today. Congratulations on this movie. Havoc has been on our most anticipated films of the year list for, I think, the past 4 years. So I was wondering if you could tell me what happened between wrapping production in 2021 and the movie finally being released in 2025?
Short answer. Scheduling issues, strikes, and then waiting to get everyone back in the room together so we could actually finish what was literally 2 weeks worth of pickups. It was just a perfect storm of all of those things together. But what it gave me, because we wrapped that film in October 21 and we delivered a cut in Feb 22. And so what it gave me then is this unusual luxury of being able to sit with the film, albeit for like 3 years, and be able to scrutinize, reshape, try different things out, experiment with it, and get to the core of what was required from the pickups. So it was a long time to kind of like sit in standby mode essentially, but you know, I felt really grateful that like the studio, you know, backed us 100% and you know, always made us feel like, okay, this is a film that's important to them, important for us to get right. And that even though we had to wait an awful long time for all of our ensemble cast to be available at the same time, you know, that they were going to like wait with us and provide nothing but support. So yeah, it's been an awful long time coming, but I'm glad to finally have it out. I'm dying to share stuff with everyone for such a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. So did the movie change a lot in that period where you had that time, that downtime to look at it?
Not a huge, huge amount. It was like, it was more kind of like you get some distance from it. So then you start to kind of look at things like and be like, okay, do we absolutely need this beat? You start looking at ways to sort of streamline elements. Because when you're really close to a production and you're really close in the edit, like straight after you've wrapped, like you're still kind of in the haze of, I know what we had to do in order to get that scene. I know the hoops we had to jump through in order to shoot that. Oh, we got rained off for all of that night. And then we crammed in the last 3 hours, but we just made it. after amount, that amount of time, you have a certain emotional detachment then from the sort of like what it took to achieve it, and then you start becoming laser focused on what does the story need, like what's better service in the film. So in a way, it provided clarity. Although I don't really want to do another 3-year stint to finish a movie again, but that was one of the perks.
So there's a shot that kicks off the opening car chase where the camera does this whip pan from left to right, and then it speeds down the street and up and around the truck. And that movement is so fast and drops you in so quickly. And it felt like the moment, like when I was watching it in the moment, it felt like a unique shot in the realm of cinematic car chases. And I was wondering if originality is something that you're striving for when you're designing a scene like that.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, you will have seen a million car chases in action movies. I've seen a million car chases in action movies. And I'm always trying to find something, regardless of whether it's a car chase or even like a fight sequence, I'm always trying to find some new shot idea or some new way of presenting something that makes it feel fresh, that makes it feel new. That was a key component. I'm glad you picked up on that opening shot, because it also serves the purpose of like throwing us into a place in a city at a time and literally, you know, making the audience feel like we're having to play catch up with a story that, you know, traditionally might have had a whole lot of sort of like setup and preamble before the truck chase happened. So we're in the middle of a pursuit, and eventually we're going to figure out why and who is involved, but not yet. So I wanted to kind of like drag the audience by the scruff of their neck into that sequence. So that was one way of achieving that. It's like, it's similar to when we did the Raid 2, we did the car chase in there, and I knew I didn't have the budget to do something that was like a Fast and the Furious film. I couldn't crash through 10 different vehicles in a storefront. So it was, all right, how do I make these 6 or 7 cars sustain me over the entire sequence? And it became, fighting with vehicles, chipping away at them the way that we chip away at bodies in these martial arts set pieces. Mm-hmm. So it's always trying to find the unusual, always trying to find the sort of the unique secret sauce for a sequence and then lean in on that.
Yeah. So speaking of designing set pieces, the club scene in this movie is just totally insane, man. Like I imagine for any scene like that, you just kind of take it piece by piece until it all comes together. But were there any aspects of it or any specific sections that were especially tough to film in that scene?
All of it. It was challenging. I think, weirdly, one of the biggest sort of strains on that sequence, I had my art department, they built us an entire nightclub from scratch for that sequence. That was like built in a soundstage. And me being me at my worst and most self-indulgent, we decided to design a set piece that was set in a nightclub that would also have like a little mezzanine horseshoe floor to it that would go all the way around the club. So then there were engineering implications that come along with building that, because it had to also support all of our bodies and weight of the people on top, as well as crew. But then just to make matters even worse, I decided, I wanted to have a glass floor section purely so I could do 2 gags. But the one that was probably the biggest strain was I wanted to be able to take the camera underneath the glass floor, but to start up above. So that required the art department to lift one section of glass floor out and then put it back in, which required like 2 hours worth of prep time before we could shoot it. And then, you know, we shot that shot all for the sake of 6 seconds of screen time. It felt important when we designed it. Realize how much of the circus has to move just because of my idiot brain that came up with that stupid idea. So, yeah.
Man. So how about the cabin shootout? That's another thing that I almost just couldn't believe as I was watching it. Anything stand out to you from your memories of filming that?
It was so much fun to shoot that sequence. That sequence was kind of like a little bit, without sounding sort of like, you know, self-serving, it was a little bit of a sort of like a revisit of 2 things. It was a revisit of the farmhouse shootout from Gangs episode 5 that we shot in the UK, and then structurally kind of a mini version of the Raid, where we would start off with guns, go into sort of bladed weapons, and then become hand-to-hand. So it was almost like the structure of it was like a mini condensed version within it. So all of it had little special moments. Again, because I'm an idiot, it required multiple builds to accommodate gags like going under the trap door and coming back up, or, you know, the flip through the beam with the collapsing roof and everything else. But what was really fun about that sequence was the design aspect, because along with Jude Poyer, my stunt coordinator, we scrutinize every sequence and we scrutinize every little beat of it, not just in terms of camera and edit points and the action itself, but also like where things come from. So we knew that we were paying homage to like John Woo and Ringo Lam and Johnny To with this film. But when it came to the sort of the gunplay in that fishing shack, we knew that we were going to slightly exaggerate how many bullets could be, you know, fit within the mag. But every time the characters would empty a gun, they would throw it away and recycle and grab somebody else's. So what that meant was we had to figure out and orchestrate which triad members would fall through windows and come into rooms, what guns they would have with them, so that we could logically track the weapons usage across the room then. So that was something that I really wanted to be specified on, because I know that there'll be people complaining about, oh, it's so unrealistic, they shoot guns all over the place. But really, if you check the weapons that they pick up, they are using them. They are recycling weapons throughout that space then.
Wow, that's wild. So I did want to ask you specifically about the gunplay and the shootouts, because you frequently have characters with these automatic weapons just blasting someone in big bursts of, you know, a dozen shots or something. And there's like a brutality there that you don't normally see in films like this. So what went into that decision, that kind of like heightened, like we are just going to empty an entire magazine every time we shoot a gun kind of thing?
It's partly paying homage to what like John Woo was setting up. So there are moments in there which are straight out of Bullet in the Head or A Better Tomorrow 2, and Hard Boiled in the Killer. And I'm sure fans will pick up on that. We actually do have a little Easter egg as well, where there's one music cue that is literally lifted from A Better Tomorrow 1, that we managed to get the rights to. So my inner geek is really happy with that. But in terms of like the other thing as well is, I've always felt like if you're doing a film with gunplay, the most irresponsible version is the version that's clean. The most irresponsible version is the version that doesn't show people in pain or consequences for the violence. So, you know, I'm not chasing a PG-13 rating. I'm not chasing like a 12A here in the UK. It's very much an 18. It's very much an R in the US. It's very much aimed at an adult audience, you know, in terms of the action. And so it should be bloody. It should be violent. When people get shot, they should bleed out. But the excess is all about my love of Hong Kong action cinema.
Yeah. So how has your approach to visual effects changed since the early days of your career?
It's been interesting because when I first did Maranto, I had no idea the level of which VFX could be applied. That was like my first sort of experience of it. And I remember there was one shot in Maranto where my VFX guy, Andy Novianto from Clay Studios in Indonesia, he put in a digital wall for us because we couldn't afford to build one. And I remember being blown away that was possible. I don't know why I didn't think it was possible, because I'd seen like a plethora of sci-fi films that did far more crazy things with VFX. But for whatever reason, it never applied to my work. Maybe because I was working at like a low budget level, I just didn't think it was, you know, attainable. And gradually over time then, the more experience I've had, the more times I've worked with VFX supervisors on the floor and learned about what it is they need, what they want for them to be able to bed in VFX better, the more I've understood what the limitations are, but also how it can help in terms of world build, in terms of action design. Because there's, you know, we did a lot practical, but there's an awful lot of VFX, helping us out in places. Andy's one of the best there is in the industry, I feel, at doing blood and debris hits and muzzle flashes. I just think his attention to detail is exceptional. But then, you know, we had incredible work from all of our other vendors, One of Us and Troll and Dupe, who did incredible world building work for us, because obviously we were shooting a film that's set in an amalgamation of different East Coast cities around America, but shooting it fundamentally in Wales. So, you know, it was always with one eye on looking at, can I fill half my frame with enough real architecture so that when we bed in the rest of it and augment it, that there's a frame of reference to try to make it feel more cohesive so that you don't become aware of the artifice of it. So, it's a game changer for me, but it's how to use it judiciously and how to use it in the right way is always my preference for it.
Cool. So I only have a couple more minutes with you. I just wanted to ask if you have a favorite shot in this movie. You're talking about your inner geek earlier. Is there one thing that really you're really pleased with that you're able to accomplish in this film?
Oh man. I love the introduction of the assassin prior to the Lawrence ambush. That big crane down coming in and then with the motorbike coming in. I've always loved that. But then I also equally love the rhythm. Shortly after that, there's a shot that goes from a guy with the gun up, like the driver with the bodyguard with the gun up that travels out through the car into the street, literally as the assassin's gun comes back down in the opposite direction. Things like that, they're only small moments, but it's like things like that, the symmetry of it and the rhythms of it and the percussive elements of it, that really excites me. Like when that
Yeah.
works and it's perfect, like the sort of the dance between camera and performer, that makes me really excited. If I give it some more thought, I'd probably come up with like 15 other shots that I really love. So I should give credit to Matt Flannery for being able to execute them all the time. But yeah.
Okay, so last question. Do you have your next project lined up as a director?
Well, if you'd asked me in about 2 or 3 weeks' time, I'd probably give you a much more informed answer. I have something that we're planning to shoot in the summer. I'm just shy of being able to announce it just yet.
Okay. Well,
Um,
I'm
but
glad to
we
hear
may
that.
let you
So
know.
hopefully I hope that it won't take as long, between movies this time around. So I'm
Yeah.
just glad to hear you got something cooking.
No, it'll probably be a much quicker process, and obviously, naturally, it's another rom-com, so yeah.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Gareth, congratulations on the movie, man, and thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you. Cheers. Thanks.
All right, you can find more about Havoc at slashfilm.com, including Chris's review, which I will link to in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all next week.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.